Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I am your host, Mark Call. This, of course, is a show where we talk about so many aspects of what that verse from Revelation 18 means when it says, come out of her, my people, so that you do not participate in her sins. And I've said for a long time now, those are obvious. And therefore, hopefully, do not partake of her plagues, which are getting to be at least as equally obvious. So what I want to do today is I hope you'll find this interesting, and I think you'll find it rewarding. So play along with me, or do the mental experiment, a thought experiment, as Albert Einstein used to refer to it, that begins with a question. And I can't help but think this has been on my mind a lot lately, especially when I draw the biblical connections. We will in just a minute here. Did the Russians, for example, during the time of Stalin, and not just the Russians, but the other subject peoples as well, did they know that Stalin was evil? I suspect most of them were afraid of the guy. They probably had a pretty good indication, even though the Russian press was lying to them about the kinds of things that were being done, people being disappeared in the night and so forth. I don't doubt that a lot of them denied all of that. But still, the question remains, did the Russians really know that Stalin was evil? How about Mao? And, you know, the tens of millions of people that he killed. Certainly a lot of farmers that suffered and died as a result of his attempt to, do exactly what the Biden Führer is doing today. They probably realized he was evil, but they too were probably cowed into silence. How about Adolf Hitler? Well, that one's a little bit easier because most Germans seemed at least to have either loved the guy, tolerated the guy. A few of them knew he was truly evil, but at least he was actually elected. So you can probably guess where I'm going today. You look at the world and you ask the question, does the rest of the world at least realize what most Americans are finally maybe waking up to but haven't yet figured out, that the imposter in the White House, the communist Chinese puppet, Biden, the little puppet for Obama, you know, how many ways can you look at this guy in his little mask at both ends is the way I like to put it, running around obviously senile, falling off bikes, blithering, making idiotic comments, lying through his teeth, at least he's still got that skill. How many of them can't see the obvious here? You look at the foreign press and you realize that the worst of them recognize that he is senile and not fit for the office. But on the other hand, how many Americans recognize just how evil this guy really is? How many recognize that, when he says, take the poison poke, oh yeah, I've taken it four times and I still got COVID, that he's lying. He doesn't really care about your lives. He wants you dead. Now, certainly there's been no shortage of information on this score. I've talked about it here for a long, long time. But back to the question here. Did the Russians know Stalin was evil? The Chinese know that Mao Zedong was evil? How about the Biden Führer? How many Americans realize that, no, he's not just senile. He's not just a laughingstock. He really is evil. And that leads me to the biblical question. I'm going to spend at least a couple of minutes today talking about a story that you'll find in the book of 1 Kings, starting in around chapter, it starts in chapter 16, but it kind of hits the ground running in around chapter 18. King Ahab, he was the king of the northern kingdom in those days, Israel, and a lot of even Christians, of course, don't have much understanding of the history here, but I'll put it this way. If you go to a dictionary and you look up evil king, you probably expect to see Ahab's picture. At least you have any understanding of biblical history. He is probably considered, although there are some, real competitors, one of the most evil kings in all of the history of ancient Israel. And if you look up evil king nowadays, I guess, you might expect to see at least evil emperor, people like Nero or Caligula. More modern times, they weren't supposed to be kings, but they certainly behaved like it. You have the Clinton regime. I did not have sex with that woman. You have the Obama regime, and of course Obama's second regime, the Biden Führer, and maybe even a Bush or two thrown in there. Remember Bush called the Constitution a GD piece of paper. So certainly there's no shortage of evil kings out there, but literally, Ahab is probably the quintessential version. And the reason, and we'll start here, and I'll take a look at some other more contemporary stories in just a second, but let's introduce it at least with the beginning of the story of this guy. It starts in 1 Kings chapter 16, around verse 29, where it says, "In the 38th year of Asa, who in those days was king of Judah, the southern kingdom, Ahab, son of Omri, became king over Israel, the northern kingdom. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria." That was what the northern kingdom was called in those days. During the time of the Mashiach, of course, Samaria was still considered a pretty gnarly place. They didn't care much for those people. That's the reason for the story of the Good Samaritan and why that resonated with folks then, because that's not what you'd expect. Kind of like the Good American, I guess you'd say, nowadays. But here's the key verse. Now it says, Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of Yahuwah. That's the real word there, you know. The L-O-R-D part is what they used to replace his real name. He did evil in the sight of Yahuwah more than all of those who were before him. And here's another indicator that he was a pretty nasty dude. See if this doesn't resonate a bit with what we see in terms of modern evil kings. It came to pass as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, in other words, another evil king, that he took as wife Jezebel. Now, there's another one, evil queen. Look her up. Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. And he went and he served Baal and worshipped him. So he went pagan on him. And I think that's going to be another interesting part because, of course, consider the modern parallels. We have some really nasty pagan kings, too, that hate everything associated with the God of the Bible. Look and see what they do when it comes to things that he says don't do, that these are an abomination. Yeah, the Biden-Fuhrer will take a transgendered dyke and put it in the position of ambassador, send it to parties. This is most recently Bastille Day. It was an international embarrassment. If you haven't seen the picture, folks, it pretty well describes the modern Caligula and what he is doing on the world stage. Anyway, this guy, the ancient King Ahab, set up an altar to Baal and the temple of Baal there where he'd built this thing in Samaria. He made a wooden image. He did more to provoke Yahuwah, Elohim of Israel, to anger than all of the kings of Israel who came before him. So I guess you could say something similar today. How many nasty evil kings have we had? Quite a few of them who did evil in the sight of the Lord or the real king, the one that we were supposed to have as opposed to all the fakes that have taken over and basically put a wooden stake in the Constitution. From there, what I want to do is pause for a second, because that sets the stage, okay? Evil king, some people picture Caligula or Nero, but if you have a biblical basis, you probably picture Ahab, although maybe people nowadays picture Obama or Biden with a mask on, no doubt. That would be kind of the image, at least, that fits with a masked marauder. Let me say it again, though. What's always bugged me? This is the reason why I'm spending a few minutes setting this up today. What's always bugged me is, what about the people who lived in ancient Israel, that northern kingdom, during the time of Ahab? Did they recognize that this guy was an evil king? Did they go along to get along? You know what's funny about it? And this is the part that has really bugged me. The Bible doesn't say one way or the other. It literally doesn't say, hey, the people didn't like this. The people rebelled. Didn't say the people were upset. Doesn't say anything at all about them. Now, with one exception that we'll get to in just a minute, because essentially there is at least one reference, and that's a key part of where we're headed today. But it hit me, folks, because I was thinking about this. As a matter of fact, I realized as I was putting the notes together for this show, that's just like today. How many people do you hear speaking up about the evil of the Biden-Fuhrer? Most of them, maybe they laugh, maybe they push a couple of memes, maybe they say, oh, yeah, like a recent poll, 83% of Americans are rightfully concerned about election integrity. In other words, they know it's going to be stolen. So, yeah, there is at least a tacit admission, but do we see people rioting in the streets? Well, unless they're Antifa and they want more terrorism and more tyranny. No. The American people, the good ones, are silent. I remember the silent majority from decades ago, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people that, I guess, a lot like Ahab, just go along to get along. Oh, they wear their masks if they're required to. They might take the poison poke. Nowadays, at least, they're starting to wake up and say, ah, you're not going to poke my, my six-month-old kid. Only 2% of parents, at least, have succumbed to that particularly evil poisoning. But still, there's a whole lot of silence out there. And yeah, that bugs me too. And as we go through what I'm going to talk about today, I want you to focus on those parallels. Think about some of the parallels here. Ask, gee, what would it have been like to be a subject under King Ahab and the evil Queen Jezebel? Well, actually, think back over the last few years. I think you're going to get a pretty good idea about it. So with that, let's go into just some of the stories that this week alone give us an idea about what a modern evil king looks like. Here's one. Now, this is an interesting piece. I won't do the whole thing. I'm going to just summarize a couple of these here because we got a lot to talk about today. But the summary from this article about I'm Delivered is the headline comes from Professor Jonathan Turley, who is a left-wing but constitutionalist professor of law. And I'll admit, I like the guy more and more. He leans quite a bit left, but he is willing to come out and tell the truth and see it and talk about it. And this is one of those times. He talks about new disclosures that have demolished the Biden Fuhrer, and I will not ever put the word president in the same sentence with that scumbag imposter's name. Anyway, he demolishes these new disclosures, demolish the Biden Fuhrer denials about everything associated with evil son Hunter. New disclosures, he says, continue the destruction of the denials by Biden that he had no knowledge, no nothing about it. Now, you might believe that he doesn't remember it nowadays because he doesn't remember what he had for breakfast or what he just said a couple days ago. But the claim that he had nothing to do with his son's business interests is a bald-faced lie. Emails that the professor here says were reviewed by Fox and the British Daily Mail include exchanges of at least 14 of Hunter Biden's business associates while the evil big guy was president, vice president. And they cast further doubt on the repeated claims of the Biden Fuhrer that he had no knowledge of his son's foreign business dealings. In one of them, which was almost plaintive, Hunter Biden actually complains that he had delivered everything that was demanded of him. Oh, yeah, didn't I get you in to see the VP? Didn't I get your pictures? Didn't I do all this? And what are you looking for? And meanwhile, the Biden Fuhrer and the White House continue to repeat these lies. Quote, I never had sex with that woman. No, that's a different liar. I have never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings. Well, maybe just emails. Is that what he's talking about? These denials have continued even after an audio tape most recently surfaced showing the Biden Fuhrer leaving a message for Hunter specifically discussing those dealings. Some of us, says Professor Turley, have written for 2 years that Biden's denial of any knowledge is patently false. Indeed, it's baffling, he says. I'll say no, it's not. It's baffling, though, says the law professor, how Attorney General Merrick Garland can ignore all the evidence here, the myriad of references to Joe Biden, in refusing to appoint a special counsel. Again, no, it's not baffling. This guy makes a mafia lawyer look really honest by comparison. And that's exactly what we're talking about. You get the point here. I wonder if if there had been a press in the time of Ahab, were people aware of the level of perfidy of this guy? People apparently were even told to avoid directly referring to the big guy. That's why they call him the big guy. They use other names. And one of the emails shows Tony Bobulinski, a business partner of Hunter's, instructed by James Dilliar, another Biden Fuhrer associate, to never speak of the former VP's connection to any of this chicanery. Quote, don't mention Joe being involved. It's only when you are face to face. I know you know that, but they're paranoid. So, says Professor Turley, these new disclosures only add details to the extent of the lies and what we know of his knowledge and his involvement. Okay. He asks the question, what does it take? I think we know the answer, folks. It doesn't matter how much evidence is amassed. The same thing was true with the rigged election. They are not going to deal with it. They're going to double down because this is truly evil. What does it say? This king did more evil in the sight of Yahuwah than all who were before him. I guess that too fits. All right, here's another example from TGP and Christina Layla and Congressman Jim Jordan, who has come forward with a letter. He sent it to the fellow masquerading as director of the FBI, the one that I call the Whoremeister in chief, Chris Wray. Now, detailing new disclosures by whistleblowers in the Federal Bureau of Investigation. What are they doing now? They are, quote, pressuring agents to artificially pad domestic terrorism data. The goal here, in other words, is to try to present a case that the white extremists, the white supremacists out there, the domestic violence extremists, they've even got an acronym for them, DVEs, are so bad they need to be suppressed, maybe destroyed, certainly take their guns away, and yeah, let's line them up against a wall eventually. Jordan's letter said, quote, from recent protected disclosures, we've learned that FBI officials are pressuring agents to reclassify cases as DVE, domestic violence extremism, even if the cases do not meet the criteria for such a reclassification. Given the narrative pushed by the Biden, he says administration, I'm going to say what it is, regime, that domestic violence extremism is the greatest threat facing our country, the revelation that the FBI may be artificially padding domestic terrorism data is scandalous. And, of course, he notes, the story notes that during congressional hearings last year, the congressional liar testified that investigations into DVE have increased significantly, and the FBI had to double the amount of domestic terrorism investigations. Well, that's because they're pushing it. They're lying about it. And, again, no surprise, but do you suspect that just maybe there were similar things happening during the regime of the most evil king in ancient Israel? How about this story? Here's a bit of good news, but at least it kind of points in the same direction. More and more people are seeing through the masks and the poison pokes. This is a story from, I saw it on Zero Hedge, and it's written from Unmasked Ian Miller. The experts, and he puts it in quotes, the so-called experts and their narratives are collapsing. Yes, there are still fanatic true believers. They run places like Los Angeles County and the entertainment industry. The masks to them are, of course, a religious rite. I'm going to say maybe it shows their subservience to modern Baal. But what they're doing now is trying to force masks back into public schools, even in places that one might have thought were conservative, like in Kentucky. And he goes on to describe what listeners here already know. The whole mask BS was nothing but BS. It was worse than that, really. The masks were not only worthless and ineffectual, but they were counterproductive because it turns out that they decreased oxygen flow, impaired children's brain development, educational capabilities. They didn't learn to read facial expressions. They rebreathed their own exhaust gases. Their brain oxygen levels and blood levels were lower. Their carbon dioxide levels were higher. There was more crap that they were expelling into the mask that was being rebreathed into them. They got sicker, more, and so forth. And after the school mask mandates were lifted in places like Virginia, the data shows cases fell dramatically. Comparisons of schools with and without idiotic mask mandates show that case rates were overall higher in the forced masking locations. I mean, gee, tell me something we couldn't have predicted if anybody actually cared about real science as opposed to the stuff that the great God Fauci preached. Now, says the story here, it's been a month and a half since the Federal Death Agency inexcusably authorized the mRNA gene modifications, the so-called vaccinations, for kids, infants now, from age 6 months to 5 years. Yes, they ignored the testing. Yes, it failed every scientific metric and standard. And in fact, it's so bad, many top employees in that regulatory body and other public health sick agencies have now quit in protest. Believe and get this, that the authorization was politically motivated, which I have to say, duh. No, folks, it wasn't politically motivated. It was genocide, and they knew it. And so do those people that are quitting. Calling it politically motivated is like saying that, you know, a little bit of sex that to teach to preschoolers is good for them. Yeah, by 8 or it's too late. This is the kind of crap that people ought to be speaking up against. But I guess just kind of like what we're seeing during the time of King Ahab, they stay silent. There's no long-term safety data, obviously, because there is no long-term testing. It's happening right now on the guinea pigs. And get this, though. Here's the good news. Maybe parents are staying silent, but at least they're not doing really, really stupid stuff as much as they were before. Recent data suggests that only 2% of children under age 5 across the country have been given their Zyklon B poison poke, which, says the piece here, is an utter disaster for the modern King Ahab and the so-called public health agencies that they control, the Baal worshiping, what, they want to sacrifice kids, right? Do you see the parallels? They pushed the FDA to roll the vaccines out, rush them, and they've now been overwhelmingly rejected. And maybe parents are getting used to their young kids being vaccinated by visits to the pediatrician. But This is, after all, the most widely publicized booga flu on Earth. If parents really believed that these shots were necessary or even safe and effective, don't you think they'd be making appointments to poke the kids? And despite the regime's best efforts, most have correctly realized there is no demonstrable benefit, and there may be deathly and permanent and deadly harm as a result. So I want you to think about this. Remember this story about the kids and the fact that parents are rejecting it. And are they, well, they're staying silent, but are they putting up with it? Maybe not. And that's a story that I think when we go through the biblical connections here in a minute, you'll want to remember. All right, and I'll remind you. Your gun is none of the government's business, says a piece from Andrew P. Napolitano. This is a related but very different aspect. Basically, it says, hey, remember when we had a Constitution? A lot of Americans don't, because we haven't had it for most of our lifetimes. But there was a time where the Bill of Rights actually meant Congress shall make no law and shall not be infringed. Something called a warrant. What a clever, cute concept. Warrants actually existed. We haven't had any of those things in decades at this point. But Judge Napolitano here makes a couple of points that will take us to the break, and I'm going to disagree with some of the things that he says, and that's part of the reason why I find this story interesting. No sooner had the Supreme Court, not too long ago, released their decision recognizing, as if it was actually written in real print, which it is, the personal individual right to keep and bear arms, and in this case carry a handgun outside the home, in spite of tyrannical locations like New York saying you peons don't have any rights. Well, the anti-constitutional so-called governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, told the court, New York is ready for you. And he says, you know, vaguely threatening the Supreme Court over a fundamental liberty could be called an offense to the Constitution, which I'd have to say, obviously. Well, says the judge, here's the backstory. He talks a little bit about the early 1930s, and I think he actually mischaracterizes. I encourage people to read the case and understand the history about U.S. v. Miller in the 1930s. But he says it this way, and this is where we'll get to the break, and I'll disagree. Until the early 1930s, gun regulation in America was tepid at best. No, folks, with the exception of Jim Crow laws, and that's a key point, it really didn't exist. Here's how the judge puts it, and I think he's hideously wrong. You signed up, you bought a gun, you told the authorities you wanted to carry it, they give you a permit, you were registered with the state. Wrong. You carried it, you just did it. Now, there were some states like New York that were already infringing it, but at the national level, shall not be infringed until this case absolutely meant it. No bureaucrat, he says, made a subjective judgment about your moral worth to own and carry a gun. Wait a second. Obvious exception. Not just tyrannical places like New York and their Sullivan Act, but in the South, there were called Jim Crow laws. The bureaucrat would make an assessment. I grew up in Missouri. I remember some of these stories, not personally, because by the time I was a kid, and I'm sure we had white privilege, not like it is now. Get what I'm saying here. The whole point of a Jim Crow law was to say the sheriff would approve whether or not a young boy would be able to go down to the hardware store and buy a gun. You look like a nice white boy. I'm sorry, you look like a nice boy. You can have a gun. You, on the other hand, your complexion's a bit dark. Maybe you can't have a gun. That is the part that the judge here is completely overlooking, and the racist roots of gun control. Do a search on that. Not using Google, of course. You'll find lots of references to it. The point is, no, registration and regulation, a lot of those kinds of things, were Jim Crow, or they were outright tyranny, and they were not common. If you go back and read the Supreme Court case, you'll see that people like Justice Clarence Thomas recognize it, and he too points to the racist roots of gun control. Anyway, the judge does go on to say that the absurdly expansive reading of some of these states here has now been overturned. And last month, the court held that the Second Amendment protects the rights of law-abiding persons. Even black ones? Yeah. See, that's one of the differences. The Jim Crow laws made a distinction that the judge just wants to ignore here. To carry guns outside the home, because that was an American tradition recognized widely as fundamental. Again, with that one exception, which Justice Thomas referenced, even in referring to the infamous Dred Scott decision, the Second Amendment wasn't a second-class right, and public carry was a component of the right to keep and bear arms, a right that he says free blacks were often denied in antebellum America. Now, of course, he doesn't come right out and say it, but I will. They want to treat all the peons as slaves. And we'll be right back.
I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me.
All right, we are back, folks. This is the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call, and today I'm talking about, some things that might or might not seem obviously connected, but the key point is the following. Do we recognize an evil king when we see one? And I think it's helpful to go back and kind of look at the quintessential evil king in the Bible, and that would be King Ahab, of course, of ancient Israel. But we've had other examples more recently of really nasty, evil dictators. They didn't call themselves king, but they ruled as if they were. People like Stalin, Mao Zedong, and now the Biden Führer, and certainly others before that. But the key is the following. There are certainly a number of consistent elements. A disdain for the God of the Bible, I'm going to suggest, is right up there at the top. Ahab was characterized as he did more evil in the sight of Yahuwah than anyone else before him. Can we say the same thing about the modern Ahab? Arguably, yes, but let's come back to that question. How about their disdain for the law? Some of them put their hand on a Bible. They swear to preserve and protect and defend a constitution that, you know, they darn well intend to gang rape. And we've seen example after example of that. And by the way, a fake president is not the only one to have done exactly that. George Bush Sr. and, well, both of the Bushes. A GD piece of paper was their attitude and exactly how they did it. And, you know, the Obamas and Clintons were even worse. How bad does it have to get, right? What we're seeing, how bad it can get. King after king in ancient Israel was worse than the one before him. He did evil in the sight of Yahuwah. Yep, this one did even worse, this one did even worse. And here we are. How bad does it have to get? Well, one of the elements that is also clear here is that disdain for the law, the hatred of the law. And even Judge Napolitano, and that's part of the reason why I'm picking on him, while the article is on track, your gun is none of the government's business, he wrote, he overlooks some of the key features. He soft pedals. He pretends that gun registration was something that was around a long time in spite of shall not be infringed. Now, there were, in fact, racist laws, Jim Crow laws, things like the Sullivan Act in New York City, but those were the exception rather than the rule. As a matter of fact, I am old enough to remember when literally a kid could go down to a hardware store and buy a .22 rifle. No questions asked. And by the way, guess how many school shootings we had? Oh, how about none? I can remember seeing kids bring their shotguns and their .22s and their BB guns into the school when I was in grade school, put them in the back of the room. Yeah, and bring them to show and tell. Can you imagine the hue and cry today? And essentially, what I am upset here by is Napolitano's kind of overlooking of some of the key elements of this. Again, his general conclusion is on target, pointing out that this is not a second-class right, but he fails to go as far as what the founders did. The words shall not be infringed mean that, and that includes no registration, period. In a bizarre concurrence, he writes, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, writing for himself alone, thanks be to God, says the judge, wrote that nothing in the majority opinion prohibits the states from requiring registration of weapons that folks are allowed to carry. You have trouble believing, he says, and this at least I think he gets right, that Kavanaugh even read the majority opinion on which he consented. If the Second Amendment protects the same category of rights that are called fundamental as the First Amendment does, well then, and this is true, so here Napolitano gets it right, then the government can no more require registration of our guns than it can require registration of our books. So at least finally he gets around to pointing out the truth. He asks the question, though, All these people, including Hochul in New York, and the representatives that just signed on to one of the biggest intended gun grabs in history, a complete gang rape of the Second Amendment, they all put their hands on a Bible and took an oath. They are all liars. They are all traitors. The truth is not in them. And if we had a real court system, folks, these people would be tried for what they intend to do, which is what? Make war against the American people. Can you think of a better way to do it? Well, I don't think they can, or they'd have already. Well, they are. They're working on other alternatives, too. But the understanding is clear. It's in the Constitution. It's one of the few crimes. Treason consists of making war against the states and the people. And that's exactly what they're doing. Now, why do we repose the Constitution for safekeeping into the hands of those who pervert it? Well, that's a darn good question. But the one I'm asking today is, how is it that people can see this going on and be so idiotically silent? Okay, here's another story. This one comes from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former U.S. Assistant Treasury Secretary. This time he's writing about medical science. But he starts with the economy, about which he's a pretty good expert. America had a market for goods produced offshore with foreign labor. Now, once upon a time, Americans produced things that they sold overseas and used here. They had a reputation, right? Made in America was a good thing. But we no longer have that economy. The U.S., which once produced its own manufactured goods and food, now imports the vast majority of it. Truth is, fewer and fewer incomes in America are based on the production of goods and services actually consumed by Americans. This, he writes correctly, is the path, and we're on it, folks, of deindustrialization and poverty. And then he makes an interesting observation. I think it's tongue-in-cheek because it's not correct, but he says, not only does America no longer have an economy, it no longer seems to have any actual economic statistics, or at least they don't make any sense. For example, inflation, they claim, is only running at 9% or so annually. We know, in fact, that it's much higher than that, but gold and silver prices have fallen. Gold's down $250 an ounce from its recent highs. Silver down about $6 an ounce, although it was up almost a buck today. Percentage-wise, these are huge declines. And inflation is known to erode the values of paper currencies, paper fiat money. Indeed, the dollar is up against the other even worse currencies like the euro. Inflation is eroding the value of real money. Gold and silver, wrong. Now, he knows this. But rigged markets, folks, are the issue. It's not the real markets. It's not real gold and silver that's down in price. It's the paper stuff. Because just like paper fiat, they can produce paper gold and silver without limit. Why? Because the rule of law is dead. They don't actually have to deliver on what were once called contracts. They just buy them back cheaper after they manipulate the price down. Ha ha, aren't we clever? What are you going to do about it? Answer, until the system implodes, nothing. And then there are some other bogus statistics, like what they call full employment, which isn't, and profits of corporations. And they're not real profits. They're inflated by inflation that's being understated. But still, he says, consumer confidence in the economy has reached the lowest point on record. Now, here you go. This is where the tongue-in-cheek meets the real world. And this is the reason why I did the story. Perhaps, says Dr. Roberts, the explanation is high gasoline prices, high diesel prices. Maybe it's the vast numbers of illegal aliens that the socialists are inviting into the country. Maybe it's the decline in the stock market and pension accumulations. Maybe it's the fear of higher interest rates now being realized, which will further erode the values of pensions and real estate and other assets. Maybe it's the billions of fiat bucks the Biden regime is throwing into the war in Ukraine. Oh, by the way, they're also throwing away most of our weaponry and ordnance so that when it's needed to defend the United States, ha-ha, it won't be there. Neither will the Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines. They're either leaving or being poison-poked and turned into transgendered idiots. Perhaps it's the attempt by the Democrats and a corrupt Department of Justice to criminalize Trump and his supporters, the Republican Party, and to criminalize even an attempt to petition the government for a redress of grievance. Oh, that's that First Amendment thing. Perhaps it's the rise of virulent anti-Americanism in what were once called school boards and universities. Now they're just centers of lower and increasingly negative education. Maybe it's the growing realization that the COVID vaccination is a deception, and that's arousing anxieties among those who were duped into taking the poison poke. Are they really going to die? They know better than to take more and more boosters, but how badly has their immune system already been destroyed? That's a place where I suggest the answer is prayer, folks, not listening to the doctors who convince you to do something so deadly idiotic that it was downright suicidal. Perhaps the answer is the numbers we're given are wrong, says Dr. Roberts, and they're serving some other secret agenda that's being foisted on us. You got it. And furthermore, he says, in the Western world, confidence in government is collapsing. The British Prime Minister had to resign, so for the Italian one, the same thing. And even the socialists don't want the Biden-Fuhrer to run for re-election. Now, I'm going to pause here because there's a story in the news that I think is just downright amazing. It has to do with Nancy Pelosi, the nutcase that claims to be Speaker of the House, number three in line for the kingship, and she is bound and determined to go to Taiwan. The story came out this afternoon about how the Chinese Prime Minister has said that we will consider this literally a situation kind of like a fire. He used the word, it'll bring down fire. And I think there's a veiled threat there, don't you? How dare she go to Taiwan? You know what? There's all kinds of mobilization. There's rhetoric. The Biden idiot was on the phone talking to him. That must have been a thrill for Xi, I'm sure. What do you make of this? Why would she do something that is intended? Maybe this is the answer to foment another attempt to say, "Hey, hit me right here, hit me right here. Yeah, give me your best shot, right? Nuke L.A., nuke Washington D.C." If I had to guess, I'd say that what's really being done is Pelosi is being offered up as a human sacrifice. Do you think the Chinese might shoot down her plane? Do you think maybe that the powers that the deep state has put in place might like to have her out of the way, along with Kamala, so they can bring in somebody really evil? I mean, at this point, the mind boggles. But when you see this level of stupidity, you just kind of have to scratch your head and say, hey, something's going on here. It's nasty. We know that it's evil. But one thing's for sure, it's not what people are being told. All right. So in any case, I like the way Dr. Roberts summarizes it. Corruption rules everywhere, he says. Wherever people in the West look, they see their culture, their faith, their God, their economy, their livelihood, their children, you name it, under attack. Truth is being disregarded. Corruption rules everywhere. Oh, by the way, even the American Board of Internal Medicine, which now has decided to strip one of the foremost doctors on planet Earth, Dr. Peter McCullough, of his board certification. Why? Because he had the chutzpah to cure COVID patients with ivermectin. And for curing patients, the EBIM has accused Dr. McCullough, one of the world's most respected physicians, of spreading misinformation. Folks, that's like accusing the prophet Elijah of being an enemy of the Creator himself, and we're going to get to that. Okay, while the U.S. medical system is corrupt, what it's now doing to Dr. McCullough is identical to what the Soviets did, and he gives several examples. We are truly at the same level of tyranny as Stalin and Khrushchev and those who followed did to the Russian people. Now, from there, let's take a couple minutes and go back. I promised we would do this. And look at the story in the book of Kings. Starting in chapter 16, where Ahab comes to power. He takes this nasty, evil queen Jezebel as a wife. And then we are introduced to this fellow called Eliyahu, or Elijah the Tishbite. He was an inhabitant of Gilead. And he says to Ahab, "As Yahuwah, Elohim of all Israel, lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be any dew or rain all of these years except at my word." So basically, the prophet Elijah decrees a drought, which lasts a number of years. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in between here, but I don't have time. We're going to skip over that. I encourage you to read it. But eventually we get to the point where he goes and stands before Ahab. That too is an interesting story. The evil king looks at him. He sees Elijah. And he says, get this, "Is that you, O troubler of Israel?" Now, imagine, folks, this would be kind of like Biden talking to a modern-day actual man of God and saying, "Is that you, O troubler of America?" Ponder the irony. The answer from the prophet, "I have not troubled Israel, but you have, you and your father's house, in that you have forsaken the commandments of Yahuwah and have followed after what? The fake gods, the so-called lords of Baal, Baal. Now, therefore, send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel, 450 prophets of Baal and the prophets of Asherah," in other words, the prophets of the fake gods, "those who eat at Jezebel's table," your evil wife, the queen's table. So the story, and hopefully you've heard the story. If you haven't, I have to condense it. It's really kind of a cool story. It's one of my favorites, honestly, because I got to admit, I love the sense of humor that this guy Eliyahu Elijah has. He is going to shame these fake priests, these fake prophets of fake gods. And he does so in living color before a whole lot of people. Elijah came before the people, and he said, now this is the reference that I made earlier. This is the only place we see the people of ancient Israel actually doing anything. The irony here is they had a prophet of God. Arguably, we don't. Certainly not to the same degree, although there are certainly a few people speaking up a bit. I hope that many of those listening to this show will be among them, all of us. But Elisha said to the people, how long are you going to falter between two opinions? Hey, and this is one of my favorite lines in the entire book. If Yahuwah, the real God, if Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is God, we'll follow him. But if it's Baal, well, then follow after him. What was the response? Oh, yeah, you know it. The people didn't answer a word. And there, folks, there it is. Think about it. Ponder the parallels. Then Elijah said to the people, I'm alone left, a prophet of Yahuwah. But Baal's prophets, they're here, 450 men. So, let's do this. We'll have a kind of a contest here. And get them two bulls. Let them choose one bull for themselves. Cut it up in pieces. Lay it on the wood. Don't put any fire on it. I'll prepare the other bull. I'll lay it on the wood. Put no fire under that one. And we'll just see whose God answers, right? They call on the name of their gods. I'll call on the name of Yahuwah. And the one who answers by fire, that's the real one. So the people said, hey, that sounds okay. Let's do that. Now, Elijah then challenged the prophets of Baal, and he said, get yourselves a bull and prepare that one first. There's a whole lot of you folks. You call on the name of your God, but don't put the fire under it. So they did it. They called from morning until noon. Oh, Baal, oh, Lord, hear us. They said, no one answered. Then they leapt around the altar, which they had made. By noon, Elijah mocked them. Now, I've got to clean this up a little bit. The King James cleans it up even more, but I think if you go back and read the original Hebrew, you see Baal was not a real God, and the prophets of Baal, the priests here, were having their noses rubbed in that by a real prophet of the real God. He mocked them, and he said, cry aloud, hey, we're talking to a God, aren't we? Either he's meditating, maybe he's busy, maybe he's out on a trip, hey, maybe he's out taking a whiz. And he used a more crude term in the original Hebrew. Maybe he's sleeping, you better wake him up. What did they do? Now think about this in the context of what we see in high school kids in and have seen it for years now in modern Baal-worshipping America. They cried aloud, they cut themselves with knives and lances till the blood gushed out on them. I'll say it again. Can you see the parallels, folks? It's disgusting, it's sad, and it's true. So much that it ought to really have people sitting up and taking notice. When midday was past, they prophesied till the time of the evening sacrifice. No one answered. Yep, there was silence there. So Elijah said, come near to all the people. They came near. He repaired the altar that had been broken down in earlier times. He took 12 stones, according to the number of the 12 tribes, the sons of Jacob, of Israel. And he then built an altar in the name of Yahuwah, made a trench around it, and he literally had him pour water on it over and over again. You'd think if that was going to cause a lack of fire, right? Pouring water on it might be the thing. Water ran all around the altar. He filled the trench, too, with the water. And then finally, it came to pass, around the evening sacrifice time, Eliyahu, the prophet of Yahuwah, came near, and he said, Yahuwah, Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are Elohim, God in Israel. I'm your servant, and that this day I have done all these things at your word. Hear me, O Yahuwah, hear me, that this people may know that you are Yahuwah Eloheka, the real, one true Lord God, and that you have turned their hearts back to you again. And at that point, fire from Yahuwah fell, consumed the burnt sacrifice, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust that licked up all the water in a trench. The people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, whoa, 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 Yahuwah, that one, the real one, he is God. Yahuwah, he is Elohim. And then Elijah rose up. Now, he did something that would now be politically incorrect, folks. And this, I think, is at least a big part of why the parallels here are so interesting. Think about it, pray about it, and ask yourself, are there some lessons here? He said, seize the prophets of Baal. This is to the people of Israel. Do not let a single one of them escape. They seized them. Eliyahu the prophet, Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon, and he executed them there. All right. Now, there's a lot more to the story. And as you know, this kind of peeves old Jezebel no end. It doesn't sit well with the evil king Ahab either. And the rest of the story, again, is quite interesting. There's a whole lot more lessons. But that's where I want to pause, because we got to draw some conclusions and make some connections here before things are over. Ultimately, both Jezebel and the evil king Ahab come to a nasty end. That takes place a couple of chapters later. Second Chronicles, chapter 18, you can read about that one, where essentially, there are other prophets, there's a lying spirit involved, and Yahuwah, the real God, sets Ahab up so that he ends up dying ignominiously in battle. That's kind of an interesting story, too. But there's a consistent theme here. And, you know, we can only hope and pray that there will be a similar judgment. I know that at some point there will be. The question is, will we see it? We don't have the prophet to be out there today, but it's this idea of the people that I want to suggest is worth focusing on. How many people are speaking up today? Answer, not very many. I've mentioned the story that there at least are a number of people realizing the election was stolen. 83% of Americans rightfully believe election integrity is an issue and that they're going to do it again come the fall midterm elections. Are they speaking up? Are they saying, hey, we know that the last election was rigged and that literally the senile guy is a fake, an imposter? We're not hearing that writ large yet. What we're seeing instead are people literally selling the country out to communist China, trying to provoke a world war. I guess if they can literally get the Russians to be PO'd enough that they nuke some places, that will distract people from the inflation, the depression that's already in place. Today there was an announcement that even if the regime wants to lie about what the definition of recession is, whatever it is, we now got one. I want to close with just a couple of quick comments from Doug Casey, who is a libertarian, Austrian-type economist. And basically, he begins by saying, hey, what should really happen? And my point, of course, is what really happens is we should come out of her. But it's interesting to see what he suggests people ought to do, and even government ought to do. Whenever people say do something, that means the government nowadays, the Lord, Baal, Baal, the big brother God. Notice? There's another parallel for you. This is, he says, why we are embarked on the Greater Depression. It's a done deal. But here's what needs to happen if we would like, and we're not, if we'd like to see this depression be as brief and therapeutic as possible. Allow the collapse of bankrupt entities, like fake banks and companies that have produced no products and are so leveraged and they're out to lunch, you know. Just let them collapse. Well, you know that's not going to happen. How about deregulate? People think the purpose of regulation is to protect consumers. No, it's to protect businesses so they can fail and not have to worry about being held to account by a free market. So, no, that's not going to happen either. Abolish the Fed, which is the actual engine of inflation. They raised interest rates. Again, they're too little, too late. It's not going to prevent the hyperinflation that they've baked into the cake, and they're not going to be abolished. You know that. Cut taxes. No, it's not going to happen, but you do know one thing. The IRS, the evil agent of the Federal Reserve, is going to continue to punish people and suggest that you had better pay your taxes to the Lord God of Baal, the big guy. He gets his 10% and more, or else. Default on the national debt. Now, this, he says, is a shocker, because even though the debt's never going to be paid anyway, and the future generation shouldn't have to pay for the stupidity of their parents, we still think it's dishonorable. But wait a minute. How dishonorable is it to do what they're going to do instead, which is to inflate it into non-existence and default that way? Answer, it's not. It's just that most people, again, are being duped. Disentangle, disengage. There is an interesting point here. And his point is, if you step back and you realize what's going on here, it's going to happen. There will be a default. It'll be through inflation. What's coming is going to be bad. And as Casey puts it, it's not going to only just be bad. It's going to be worse than even I can imagine that it's going to be. Even if this were turned into a magically free market society, we'd still have a depression. And here's the key. The last depression, with little consumer debt, because people didn't, they bought things on layaway, remember that? And there were actually farms in the United States, so people didn't starve, they could go out and work on a small family farm. Well, that's been destroyed. Bill Gates is buying up the farmland that the Chinese communists haven't already bought up. There is an entire effort, we've talked about it, to destroy the food supply, destroy the ability of people to fertilize, to have diesel, to harvest, to ship the crops. This is planned, and it's going to be extremely ugly. So whereas it was easier and vastly less regulated in the early Depression, this new greater one is going to be some kind of nasty. Well, you know the answer. We've already talked about the answer. It's the same as always. Bible says, come out of her, my people. Don't participate in the sin so you don't partake in the plagues. But what we're seeing is we're there. And I'll suggest, again, if we go back and look at the parallels, and we see the evil kings of the past, even the ones that were of biblical level proportions, honestly, can you suggest that Ahab is a whole lot worse than those who are today destroying everything that was once called scriptural? Everything that would have once been called associated with the God of the Bible? If the God of the Bible says that, male on male homosexuality is bad, what are they going to do in the schools? Teach it? Talk about fisting? Encourage kids to cut off their genitalia and become transgendered, which is probably even worse as a way of literally rubbing his face in it, making him angry. And isn't that just exactly what the modern King Ahab and his new priests of Baal are up to? So once we see it, now what? And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.